Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at my private practice, the Couple Center and Couple Speak, in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's 20 to 25 minute mini episode is about a subject most people have experienced but may not understand or have tools to deal with. I'll be talking about the minefield, as I call it, we all host in our brains, and teaching you about how to manage it more effectively by, one, knowing what it's about, and how to bring your spouse or partner on board so they can be part of helping, not part of further detonations, as I refer to them. It's a 5-point exercise to use, and I'll be walking you through it so that as you, first of all, you can learn your own minefield and you can develop better coping strategies to manage it so it doesn't feel like it's running you. Now, one technical piece first. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, which I always welcome, and you've called into the studio, simply dial 1 on your phone and you'll be in line to come on the air. You won't be able to do that if you're listening to the show, either live streaming or afterwards streaming. But if you've called in, feel free to dial 1 on the phone and I'll be happy to engage you around any questions or comments. And I usually take them in the middle of the show. So here's a little background story as an illustration to this show. I was living in New York with my new husband, Tom, at the time, and we were in one of those gigantic stores. I think it was Costco, and we were tooling around having a good enough time until somehow we got separated, which is should have been no surprise to me because what I learned really early on in the relationship is that my husband would get very engrossed in displays, whether we were in a museum or any place, he'd be looking at things and get very engrossed. And anyway, we got separated. And and what you would need to know is that I had the keys in my pocketbook, the keys to the car. This was the store where I'm sure there was an intercom, so there were resources available to have him paged if I needed to. But none of that was clear to me at the time. What did happen was that I started sweating and getting very anxious and feeling very clammy, feeling my heart racing. And what was happening to me was that I was having a panic attack. And I felt a real sense of desperation being separated from my husband. And what you would need to know about me is that I'm not, people don't experience me as a needy person or as a particularly dependent person, but I felt real panic getting separated from him. And I didn't know what was going on until I realized that I felt like a very small child and had a realization that I haven't felt like this since I was about 5 years old. And what happened was that I was experiencing one of the mines in my minefield, as I like to think of it, an area of vulnerability, an area of potential triggering around that vulnerability. And the separation from my husband had set off or detonated one of the mines. And at the time, you know, I looked for my husband, didn't get on the pager or anything like that, but looked for him, finally found him. And when I found him, I reamed him, you know, back, you know, up one side and down the other. I was was practically hysterical. I was enraged, and my husband didn't know what was happening. He thought, who is this person I have married? My God, what's the matter with you? Why are you so angry, and why are you so charged? And that's when I realized that, oh, this is something that I think, a feeling I have experienced before, and something I have, a memory that I have probably repressed. What I got in touch with was the fact that I felt like I was five because at age five, I got lost at Jones Beach. My family lived in Westchester, about an hour and a half from Jones Beach, which is this enormous beach with many different parking lots, each of which would house about maybe 2,000 cars or something like that. And when you're from New York, what you're used to is that every inch of sand is covered with a blanket and lots of people on it. You don't go to the beach expecting some kind of totally natural experience. It's a very social day, but there are thousands and thousands of people at the beach. Anyway, I, on this particular day, had gotten separated from my family. And what they used to do in those days with children when they got separated was they would haul them up into the lifeguard chair, and the lifeguard would hold you up like you were a piece of meat, displaying you in every direction, hoping some concerned parent would notice and come and claim you. And what happened was that I had this vague memory of a lifeguard holding me up, being on display, and nobody coming to claim me. And in my little five-year-old self, I had a recollection of the feeling that, uh-oh, nobody's going to come for me. I'm all alone. And having some vague sense that maybe I had been too fresh that day. I was noted for being kind of a mouthy kid. Maybe I've been too fresh and nobody wants me anymore. In any event, it wasn't long before my father came running, sobbing, charging toward the lifeguard chair on the sand, very happy to see that I had been found. And, you know, so there was this obvious feeling of relief, but also a lot of emotional charge around the whole event. What apparently had stayed with me without my realizing it consciously was a memory of being left alone, a memory that I carried in my body of feeling abandoned, feeling that nobody wanted me, and that I was all by myself, surrounded by thousands and thousands of people. So when, you know, after my husband and I got reunited in the store, you know, outside the store, and I collected myself and I realized, whoa, that's what this is about. This is what I associate to this feeling. I never realized this before. I explained it to him. I filled him in on it. And he had a better understanding of why I had such an extreme reaction to what to him looked like a very kind of benign, uneventful event. So it really helped him have more empathy around the fact that one of the mines in my minefield was a mine about being left, being separated, and feeling abandoned. So what we did was we made a decision about, given the fact that we were living in New York and we didn't want to narrow down our life and not go to any public events, we made a decision about, in the future, what do we do if we get separated, knowing that his pace at observing things and getting engaged with things, no matter where we'd be at, would be slower and more deliberate than my pace. I kind of race through a lot of things in life. So we made a decision about what we would do, and that before we went to any particular event with lots and lots and lots of people, we would make a decision about where we could meet at what time. So we did that, and it was a proactive agreement, really about managing my trigger with more empathy and more, mindfulness. So how we could avoid unnecessarily setting off that mine in my minefield. And to this day, when we go to large-scale events like a country fair where there's, I don't know how many thousands of people, or, you know, anything where there's there are crowds, we talk ahead of time about, okay, if we get separated, let's meet over there at such and such a time if, you know, if we don't see each other. And I have, to this day, felt much more confident. I don't feel restricted in any way. When we do get separated, and we have gotten separated on several occasions since, I still feel a mild sense of panic. I experience it in my gut. I also get my heart starts racing. But it's a very different experience because I'm reminded of the fact that, I have a tool. I have a tool. I have a husband who's on board, who understands this, who hasn't been dismissive around it, who's part of the solution, and I have been able to engage my adult self around how to manage this particular very loaded mind so it doesn't have to unnecessarily go berserk in an explosion, okay? So now what I will explain to you is what the plan is. First of all, everyone has their own minefield. I think of it as a minefield, areas of vulnerability that can get triggered in certain situations that are vaguely reminiscent of something from your past that felt toxic or scary in some way. Everyone has them, whether you're aware of them or not, unless you've grown up in a complete bubble. And I don't know anybody who grew up in a bubble. So the point is, how do you manage the minefield so it doesn't manage you? Here's my plan that I'd like to share with you. First of all, if you'd like to understand a little bit more about your minefield, you're going to have to reflect upon triggering situations from your past. So one of the things you can do is to notice any repeated or predictable bodily experiences of stress in certain situations. So notice the situation. So it might be a particular kind of social situation. It might be a particular kind of environment. Notice where you experience stress and how you experience it. Is it a feeling that your heart is racing? Do you sweat a lot? Is there gastro distress, like stress that you experience in your gut, like your stomach churning, or you feeling nauseous? Do you get dizzy? But to notice bodily sensations that are expressions of the stress response getting activated. Also, notice any patterns of emotional vulnerability in certain situations. So think about, when and where do I feel most vulnerable? Do I feel most childlike? Do I feel most alone or just most vulnerable? And also be aware of what kind of thinking do I use, particularly catastrophic thinking. What are you telling yourself about the event? When you think about any kind of patterned events like this, what do you say to yourself that might ramp up stress? And we tell ourselves things. We interpret situations in different ways, but what we tell ourselves can often not only exacerbate the stress, but be an indicator. So if you notice that you're saying to yourself, this will never change, this will never change, there's nothing I can do about it, or nobody cares about me, or nobody understands me, something catastrophic like that, that is something that you should log and notice the events around it. What I'm encouraging you to notice as you begin to create a map of your minefield also are your fight, flight, or freeze responses. Which of those do you generally use? In my case, what I noticed was I had a reaction of aggression, a fight response that didn't make any sense at the time, but as I thought about it, afterward, it was an illusion of some kind of empowerment, but it was a stress response. Okay, so number two, as you're mapping out your mind field, notice things that are familiar from your past. So in my case, I was thinking, when did I feel like this? How old was I? And what came to mind was I was very small. I was about 5 years old or something like that. I was very, very small and very vulnerable. So try to make a connection with how old you were at the time, roughly how old. Where were you? What happened? Who protected you or not? How did you cope? You know, so really fill in all the details of the situation. In my case, it came right back to me. I was in Jones Beach, age 5, lost, held up in a lifeguard chair. Nobody was claiming me. Nobody seemed to be protecting me, and the lifeguard didn't feel like he was helping. And also, see if you can connect as you think about the past event. What did you say to yourself about the situation? I had a vague memory of thinking, uh-oh, I was too fresh. They don't want me anymore. I really did a number this time. So, in other words, you are connecting the present stress response, the present triggering event, to a past experience, okay? And I'm wondering, just before I go on, about halfway done now. I'm wondering if there are any questions. There are a few people on the line. Does anybody have a question or a comment so far? Nope. Okay. I'm going to continue. So now what I would like you to do, the third part of this exercise, is label the mine. Think of it as a mine that can get detonated. What's it about? Is it about abandonment? What are the emotional features of this mine? Is it about abandonment like mine, my mine? Is it about some kind of abuse? Is it about some form of shaming, some form of hurt? See if you can give it an emotional context that defines the mine, okay? So I know my mine is about feeling all alone, feeling abandoned, and nobody's coming to get me. Nobody's rescuing me, okay? The fourth step in this little exercise is to enroll your adult self. So in other words, think about, what do you need to feel safer in the presence of the mind? And this is kind of recognizing that this is your baggage. It's probably something you're going to carry with you, and hopefully over time it will get less loaded, less pronounced, feel like it intrudes less. But legitimize the fact that you're carrying baggage. You have areas of vulnerability that you're going to trek with you wherever you go. What do you need to feel safer in the presence of it, and what do you need, what kind of tools do you need so that you use your adult self to prevent the full-scale detonation of this mind, okay? Do you need reassurance? Would that be helpful? Do you need an exit strategy? Very often people who have experienced some kind of traumatic event need to know, where is the exit door? How can I get out of here if I feel feeling trapped is a very typical mind, by the way, for people feeling stuck in a situation with no way out. So would it be helpful to have an exit strategy in certain situations that can be triggering? What do you need in order to feel safer from your spouse? What would support look like? What would help you feel less vulnerable? You, in order to enlist your spouse, you're going to need to understand these things. You're going to need to know about it. So reflect upon it first. Try not to wait until you're in the middle of the situation. You may already know about some of your minds, but think about them this way. And then Step five, the final step, is enlisting your spouse or partner, as I did with my husband. Instead of just saying to him, oh, you know, that's very upsetting to me when I get separated, I explained to him, I think one of, I got triggered in that store, and let me tell you what it was about. So I described the mine. I told him that it was about feelings of abandonment and feeling alone and left. And I helped him understand more about it by talking about the emotional context for it, the historical context. What happened that I remember that came up for me that has left some scar tissue and that can get activated in situations that are similar. Now, instead of just saying this to your spouse or partner, tell them what you need. Let them know, what you have learned you need to do for yourself, but let them know what they can do to be helpful. So in other words, you're devising an agreement the way my husband and I did to walk gingerly around the mine while you continue to do your psychological work related to it. So in other words, that piece is about how we can be proactive, what together we can do so we don't unnecessarily detonate one of my minds. So by having an agreement with my husband that, all right, if there's more than like 100 people at this event, if there are thousands of people, let's have an agreement about meeting up if we get separated. Then I don't have to go through this agony because when the mind gets detonated, there's a lot of anguish and there's a lot of pain. And one of the things you'll be doing is not only parenting yourself, reparenting yourself, enlisting your adult self to help your, you know, areas inside you that are vulnerable, but you'll be bringing your spouse on board in a very empathic way, in a very attuned way. That doesn't mean that your spouse needs to walk on eggshells around you, because you're not saying to them in every single situation in life, I'm a mess. What you are saying is there are situations where I carry maybe more vulnerability than the next person because of past events. I need you to understand it and be on board with me. So I teach this exercise to couples, and couples report that it's very helpful. It really, it's very empowering, and it helps them feel closer and more connected with each other. And it helps them, you know, it helps people avoid full-scale triggering, or if there is, to the extent that there is triggering, it helps contain it so that it doesn't feel so bad. So that's it. It's a little exercise, a small show. I hope this little talk has been useful to you. And I want to thank my listeners for, tuning in. It's always good to know that people are interested. And I hope you'll now feel better equipped to manage your own minefields with this five-point exercise. Now, if you'd like help with this or most any other issue, feel free to contact my voicemail in Portsmouth, New Hampshire at 603-431-7131. It's 24/7 voicemail. I'll call you back as soon as I can. And if you'd like, we can set up an appointment. So it might be around this or most any other issue, but I'd be happy to talk with you about setting up an appointment. My next podcast will be on May 23rd in about 5 weeks at 8:30 p.m. And I will be announcing the subject and a possible guest. Okay, so good night all, and I hope you're enjoying a nice spring wherever you are. Take care.